Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Professor Pastor Paul's Midweek Bible Festival. This is the second week of Lent, and we are reading now from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 8, verses 31 to, 38. Hear now the Word of God. Then Jesus began to teach them that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days, rise again. He said all this quite openly, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and looking at his disciples, Jesus rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." He called the crowd with his disciples and said to them, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world and forfeit their life? Indeed, what can they give in return for their life? Those who are ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of them the Son of Man will also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Now, there are two separate sections here that are associated thematically, but which in themselves are distinct dialogues. The first occurs between Jesus and Peter. Jesus and Peter are with the other disciples, and Peter has just declared in front of them all that Jesus is the Messiah. Mark does not include the line, "the Son of the Living God," you know, when Peter says, "you are the Messiah." Other gospel writers say that he added "the Son of the Living God," but Mark is a little bit more parsimonious when it comes to language. And in Mark's gospel, the words out of Peter's mouth are only, "You are the Messiah." So Jesus is the Messiah, and Jesus tells them, "Don't tell anybody about my identity. Don't tell anybody about this." But then he tries to explain what the being the Messiah means to his disciples. It turns out that Jesus' status as the Messiah is not exactly what the disciples expect or would like it to be. It seems likely that they, like many others, may be envisioning the Messiah as a political or perhaps military leader, someone who might revolt against Rome maybe, and perhaps reestablish the kingdom. You know, a la David, you know, return to the good old days, back to the future. This may be what they want, but it is not what they get. Jesus, upon hearing for the first time his identity spoken aloud, right? Jesus has just heard his own identity spoken aloud. "You are the Messiah." He attempts to clarify, tell them what it means to be the Messiah. And what he says is nothing like they expect. He says, "The Son of Man," a clear self-reference, "must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed." Which, of course, sounds like so much nonsense to everybody. And the fact that Jesus follows it up with, "And after 3 days, I will rise again," that probably didn't really help him in the believability department. But the text is careful to say that Jesus said all of this quite openly, plainly, simple language, not layered metaphorical language. He said it directly. Now, this is the first of three times that Mark records Jesus saying that he must undergo great suffering. He must. Now, the word "must" in the NRSV softens a little bit, a Greek term that very pointedly means it is necessary that. It is necessary that the Son of Man undergo sufferings. Which illuminates the fact that Jesus' suffering and death are part of a larger story, a larger plan that cannot be accomplished without these things happening. This is the way that Jesus has to do it. After Jesus makes this plainly spoken but cryptic announcement that he must be killed, Peter takes him aside and begins to rebuke him. Now, Peter's words are not recorded, but clearly he is upset. The word rebuke here indicates sharp disapproval, pointed criticism, hard words. Peter lets Jesus have it. It's a rebuke. It's not a gentle correction. It's not a suggestion for help. It's something like, Jesus, I can't believe you're saying this. What's wrong with you? Why are you saying this? Never say things like that. That's a rebuke. Never say things like that. Stop it. Now, maybe he followed this up with some nice Peter-style tough talk like, whatever, man, this is simply not happening. I won't let it happen. I will protect you. Well, whatever Jesus says in response, Jesus turns right back on Peter and uses his own harsh and startling language. Get behind me, Satan, he says, contrasting the purpose or will of God for human beings with the purposes human beings would have for themselves. Your ways are not my ways. Get behind me, Satan. What you think is the best thing for me is not what God thinks is the best way for me. And also, interestingly enough, he turns to the disciples, all of them, to say it. He turns, Peter took Jesus aside, but when Jesus rebukes Peter, he makes that rebuke public, or at least public for the disciples. Okay, to get behind me, Satan. That stuff. That is in front of all the disciples. So Jesus, again, contrasts the purpose or will of God for human beings with the purposes human beings might have for ourselves. You have your mind on earthly things, not divine things, Jesus says. God's way and the human way are not the same. Now, this reminds me of one of my favorite films. It's called The Tree of Life. Came out about 10 years ago. It tells the story of a family living in small town Texas in the 1950s. Its themes are the perennial, you know, life, death, hope, love, beauty, truth. But its opening monologue, spoken by a Catholic woman, sets up the theme. The nuns, she says, taught us there are two ways through life. The way of nature and the way of grace. She continues, you have to choose which one you'll follow. Grace doesn't try to please itself. Grace accepts being slighted, forgotten, disliked. It accepts insults and injury. But nature only wants to please itself. Get others to please it too. Nature likes to lord it over them, to have its own way. Nature finds reasons to be unhappy when all the world is shining around it. And love is smiling through all things. The nuns taught us that none who ever loved the way of grace and follow the way of grace ever comes to a bad end. Two ways through life. The way of nature and the way of grace. Now, the way of grace is the way of Jesus, who was slighted, abandoned, and rejected. The way of nature is the way of Peter, who wants to please himself and to work according to the normal laws of power and subjugation. Peter wants a powerful military or political leader. But the way of grace is the way of God. The way of grace is the way of God. And Jesus tells Peter, you are setting your mind not on the way of grace, but on the way of nature. To use the language from the film. Then, as I said, well, that's the end of the first part, the first segment. Then Jesus sort of widens his audience, calling the crowd with his disciples, says, crowd, come on, I'm going to speak to all of you. And he delivers a short, but very powerful and very memorable sermon. If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. He's trying to drive home the character of his mission, to expand on the more private message aimed at the disciples. His way is not the way of nature, but the way of grace. If you want to become my followers, deny yourself and take up your cross. The way of grace. Grace doesn't try to please itself. It accepts being slighted, forgotten, disliked. It accepts insults and injury. So deny yourself. Take up your cross and follow me, Jesus says. With these words, Jesus evokes the well-known Roman practice of crucifixion, which terrorized their subject peoples, and in particular the custom of requiring the condemned to carry the crossbeam on which they were to be killed. I'm sure no one, not even the disciples, thought Jesus' words alluded to any real death. I wonder what they really did think. Jesus goes on, and I can see him giving Peter the old side eye, the old Jesus side eye, when he says, those who want to save their life, Peter, will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. Nature only wants to please itself, get others to please it too, to have its own way. Those who want to save their lives follow the way of nature, and they will go the way of all nature. Their lives will be lost. But those who willingly follow the way of grace, who accept being slighted, forgotten, disliked, who accept insult and injury for the sake of the gospel, will, by their very actions, save their lives. These words of Jesus are, of course, difficult. Lose your life to save it. But they point to a reality we must face, especially during this season of Lent, and that reality is our lives are short. Psalm 90 reads, Lord, you turn back on us, you turn us back to dust and say, turn back, you mortals, for 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it is past, or like a watch in the night. You sweep them away. They are like a dream, like grass that is renewed in the morning. In the morning it flourishes and is renewed. In the evening it fades and withers. For all our days pass away under your wrath. Our years come to an end like a sigh. The days of our life are 70 years, or perhaps 80 if we are strong. Even then their span is only toil and trouble. They are soon gone and we fly away. Our lives are tiny, fleeting things. And to save our own lives is to strain to save a tiny, fleeting thing. It is nature clinging to nature. To save our own life is to fight to revive a single dying ember. The way of nature is the way of futility. Hear Jesus' words then. Lose your life to save it. Better to root our thoughts and actions, our very lives, in God, our eternal source. Better to accept our mortal frame without holding back. Accept our mortal frame without reservation. Better to love with abandon. The way of grace, the way of Jesus, is the way of self-emptying love. And this, as I said, is the way of Jesus. So love everyone, friends, just as Jesus did. With a love that is self-emptying, a love that accepts insults. In the face of certain death, then, And in the words of the Tree of Life, I leave you with these words. Help each other. Love everyone. Every leaf, every ray of light are a gift. The only way to be happy is to love. Unless you love, your life will flash by.